Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Greg Priddy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm well. I'm well.
Good. Well, tonight's our last on-air appeal for our 2013 WJCU Radiothon. We've done really well up until today. It would be great to go over the top with some more support from you, our listener. What do you think, Greg?
I think they'll come through. Cyclists always find a way.
Yes.
In the end. And there's just a few more days, a few more hours to call in your pledge at 216-397-4438, or you can send it in online at wjcu.org.
And we have had pledges from all over the world, literally, down in Australia, up in Canada, people from all over the United States. It's been really, really nice. So if you haven't made your tax-deductible donation and would like to support the Outspoken Cyclist and WJCU, it's a great radio station. I love being here. Everybody is really, really nice. All of the money for your pledge does go to the station. It doesn't go to the college. It doesn't go to the church. It doesn't go anywhere else. So, again, we will take your pledge over the phone at 216-397-4438. Or you can go online, wjcu.org, and punch the Pledge Online button. And a big thanks to all of you who have already shown your support for the show. We do very much appreciate it.
You know, WJCU is radio on the honor system. It comes to you every week, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, whether you pay for it or not. It's free. Just, turn on your radio or fire up your computer or your iPod, and there it is. But it does cost money, and how we get that money is from contributions from listeners. So it's on the honor system. And I also want to make one other point is that if you're listening to any sort of commercial radio, you may think that you're the audience, but in reality, you are the product. You're the product that radio station is selling to their advertisers.
That is true.
And they are serving, and there's nothing wrong with that. Commercial radio is fine operation. It has its place in the world. I have nothing against it whatsoever. But you do need to be aware that the radio broadcaster in a commercial situation is primarily responsible to their advertisers to deliver you as a listener. Here it works a little bit differently. We are serving you. We're programming what we think and we hope that you want to hear. And so you are the boss in this situation. You are the audience. You are the ones that we're targeting. And we don't have to worry about serving any corporate masters or any advertisers or anybody else. We just have to focus on bringing you content and programming every week that you enjoy. So that's a little bit different dynamic, and I think that is what makes it worth paying for as opposed to just getting it for free.
And we only ask once a year. Yes. After this week, it's gone. When is the website coming down?
I talked to Mark Krieger, our GM, and I think we've talked him into holding it open a little bit longer.
Oh, good.
After this coming Sunday. The one change that will have to happen on Sunday is that the opportunity to get a premium will be turned off because we have to order those premiums. We have to deliver those premiums. We can't let that just drag into April and May. So if you want to pledge, I think there'll be an opportunity for that. But just get it out of the way now, and then you can enjoy the rest of your riding season.
There you go.
Okay, 216-397-4438. Or if you're listening to this on a delayed basis and it's into next week or whatever, wjcu.org. Check out the website. You'll be able to pledge on your own through the website.
Okay. Let's move on to this week's show. We actually have guests in studio this evening. It's always a pleasure to actually see people face-to-face instead of, you know, kind of hear just a voice and try and figure out what they look like. Rod Hutton and Joe Florian have brought themselves up to Northeast Ohio from their respective homes near Columbus to talk with us about their new bicycle touring company, Buckeye Country Road Bicycle Tours. I've lived in Ohio most of my life. I've always thought bicycle touring here offers some attractive and unique opportunities. Evidently, so did Rod and Joe. Buckeye Country Road Bicycle Tours' first offering is a week-long tour of Amish country which they say is anything but plain. That's what their website says. They will be with us in a very short moment here, but staying with the touring theme this evening, we're going to welcome back Willie Weir. Willie is sort of the bicycle minstrel. He and his wife, Kat, just completed an 8-week tour in Myanmar and Southeast Asia. I have followed their blog entries, which included some breathtaking pictures as well as amazing descriptions of food. And as always, Willie will have some great stories to relate. He had some really cool stuff on his website, too, sounds that he recorded along the way. We do have some news. We'll probably beat our radiothon drum one or two more times this evening. And as always, we thank you for listening to the show. Let's welcome Rod Hutton and Joe Florian to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for making the trek up here from mid-Ohio.
Yeah, thank you, Diane.
It's our pleasure being here.
All right. Let's get each of you introduced and tell us a little bit about yourselves and your background before we talk about your new bike touring company. Go ahead, Rod. Tell us about yourself.
Well, we both are coming off of long careers elsewhere. I was a professor, actually, in a theological seminary for 30 years and recently retired. But I have been cycling for about 22 or so years. So finally decided to do that, which I had been wanting to do for quite some time.
Okay. And Joe?
Well, Diane, I'm an old Cleveland boy. I was born and raised on the west side of Cleveland, went to John Marshall High School, and I make lots of people laugh by talking about our football team, the Lawyers, there.
That's right, and, the John Marshall Lawyers. I forgot about that.
And I've been cycling since the 80s. I am, like Rod, recently retired. In my case, I'm a computer guy, worked at Hewlett-Packard, and been cycling for quite a few years. I've done a lot of tours of the Ragbri and Goba variety, as well as the smaller tours that we're going to be talking about with you, that in places like Vermont with VBT and out in Utah and California and in Europe.
You guys have started a new company, and I've always thought that Ohio has some really nice opportunities for bike touring. You know, we have some wonderful colleges. A lot of presidents have come from Ohio. We have some different terrain, north and south and mid-state. When did you decide to begin the Buckeye Country Touring Company?
Oh, well, I had been wanting to do something like this for quite some time, Diane. When I, probably 15 years ago or so already, I started designing week-long or multi-day rides for friends, just something to do, and had a bunch of friends join in, and we were camping here and there. And so I always had it in the back of my mind that if I really could do what I wanted to do, it would be something like this. But when looking at retirement, finally I thought, hey, Rod, if you're not going to do it now, when are you ever going to do it? And so I just determined about 2 years ago or so to approach folks and see if anyone was interested in doing this with me.
And Joe, how'd you hook up with Rod?
Well, you know, we have been biking buddies for a long time, and it so happened that in March, I think it was, of 2012, we had done a ride with a few other friends. We were sitting in a restaurant, one of our favorite after-ride places in Groveport, Ohio, just having some Italian food or something, and Rod just kind of announced that he had this desire to start up a bike tour company. And he said, would anybody maybe like to go in with me? And at the time, I was sort of having thoughts about being a little ready to leave my job, you know, and retirement wasn't really imminent yet, but I thought about things and I just said, yeah, Rod, I think I'd like to do that. So that's sort of when it started for me.
And that was back in 2012?
2012, yeah.
Okay. So how long did it actually take you guys to put this Buckeye Country Roads Bicycle Tours idea together?
We've been working on it for some time. I was probably already sketching out some things then. And, we've been laying out routes for our first ride that we have coming off this next summer. for months and months now. Already last summer, I and my wife were out riding routes and out in Amish country. And then Joe and I, especially this fall, once he retired, we've been out riding routes and getting things planned, talking with people, setting up logistics, all of the things that you need to do in order to be able to put something like this together.
Yeah, we got going pretty good in the fall because the summer, I spent a lot of the last summer recovering from a broken hip because I had a fall on my bike and some gravel. And
you guys are the walking wounded.
We
Rob
are.
Comes in there with a broken rib.
We're due for some good health here for a long time to come.
Really?
So I think we're well positioned now to get the ride going and do just fine with it. But last fall, we got into it, you know, pretty well with all the planning and so forth.
So let's talk a little bit about the ride that's coming up. You are going to be offering a week-long ride in Amish country, which, of course, is beautiful because you're not too heavily trafficked in those areas.
Correct.
When will that ride actually take place?
It is going to be July 22 to 27, so 6 days of riding, five nights of lodging. July 22 to 27.
And how many guests will you be able to accommodate for the ride? How many people are you hoping to get?
Well, this was one of the first things that Joe and I sort of had to hash out because my experience was generally with larger rides. And so I had thought about having larger groups of people. Joe's experience, well, you can talk a little bit about that, Joe.
Yeah, I've been on, like I told you earlier, I've been on, say, Vermont bicycle tours and so forth, where the typical group size was in the 20s.
Right.
And I thought that those rides were very nicely done, very comfortable situation. You got to know everybody in the group with a group of about 25 people or so, and they would typically have two leaders who could handle a group like that very, very nicely. So we settled on a target size of about 25 people for our rides.
That's sort of what I was thinking you would be doing when I heard about the company. You know, that you're not right. You're not really trying to emulate a Ragbri or a Tazra
or Goba. No.
Yeah, very cool.
We're certainly limited at least by the fact that we want to house everybody in one hotel facility.
And you will be using hotels?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
We're trying to locate the best hotels or motels that we can find in a given area.
So let me ask you a different question. Has anybody signed up yet?
Yes. We have, about five registrations so far.
Cool.
And they're all from out of state. So we're...
Yep.
We have a couple
from Minnesota, a couple from Michigan. And we have five, and then probably, I would guess, four others who said, we want to go, but we want to hold off until March. And so if assuming they come through, we're probably about at 10 right now. And
Are people finding out about it?
Well, I think in this case, all five of these people found out about us through the Bicycle Tour Network, which has a website where you can look up rides in various places or in various times. And so I believe they all found us that way.
Yeah, Joe and I have been very intentional about trying to join what we think are the critical bicycle tour industry networks, such as the Bicycle Tour Directors Network with their calendar. That's probably – my guess is that that is the chief way that many people find out what rides are out there. But we're also members of the Ohio Bicycle Federation, and Joe and I are both members of COP, although we are not a COP, a Columbus Outdoor Pursuits. We're not a Columbus Outdoor Pursuits organization, and – we may, in fact, be a little bit in competition with them, but we're such a different animal than Columbus Outdoor Pursuits that I don't think that there will be any sort of difficulty there. And a couple of other organizations that we simply try and market ourselves as much as we can, because that's our immediate task, is to build the reputation of the company and get the word out.
Rod had mentioned the Ohio Bicycle Federation with their annual calendar. We will have a 1/8 size ad in that calendar when it comes out, I think, around the 1st of March. So you can look for that.
Rod Hutton and Joe Florian are the founders of the Buckeye Country Roads Bicycle Tours, a new touring company in our home state of Ohio. And we're going to continue on with what we're talking about their new ride. Did you name this ride?
We call it the Amish Country Adventure.
Okay. Very nice.
It's not sexy, but it's descriptive.
It's descriptive. Right. It's pretty hard to be sexy in Amish country, I would say, but it is beautiful. So how much road support are you going to offer?
We're going to have a full full-sized or let's say an oversized van to haul all the essential SAG stuff and so forth, carry bikes and luggage as needed and that kind of thing. So we'll offer a very good level of support. At any given time, we'll have one of us driving the van and the other will be on a bike riding with the folks.
And on on the 3 days when we are in transit from point A to point B, let's say, we will also have a second vehicle out on the road. So on those more critical days, we'll have two vehicles plus one of us, either Joe or myself, will alternate riding with the group and sort of making sure that we offer support that we can from the road itself.
So what are some of the highlights of this tour?
Oh, chocolate, cheese, wine, pastry.
I see. Ride to eat. Here we go. All right. How about scenery and places where you're stopping?
Oh, well, the scenery is lovely. There's no question about it out there in the Amish country, in that whole area, New Philadelphia, Coshocton, Berlin. It's stunning scenery.
Anyone who is familiar with that territory knows that flat it is not. And so this first tour, it's a bit of a risk, and we talked about the risks involved of having a tour that involves such gradients as we offer. We probably have two climbs each day that will be quite a challenge for folks, but the scenery just can't be beat.
What's your average daily mileage? Have you posted that?
Not long. This okay. ride we decided to keep a little bit on the short side because of the terrain. But I would say we're offering a longer route that will generally be 45 to 50 miles, and then a shorter route that will generally be between 30 to 35 miles.
Okay. So what are your long-term goals for the Buckeye Country Roads Bicycle Touring Company? How many rides do you think you want to offer in the long run? I mean, do you see a lot of Ohio adventures here?
Well, we've been talking about this a lot lately, and we think that our sweet spot for what to offer might be something like 3 to 4 rides a year. Not a whole, you know, not a whole long slew of rides, but maybe build up to 3 to 4. Try to build up sort of a staple where maybe the Amish tour will be offered year after year, and Rod's now looking at a tour in the Lake Erie Islands area, the Port Clinton, Sandusky, you know, that part of the state. I'm looking a little bit actually up around here in the covered bridges, Northeast Ohio, Amish country.
Sure.
And we're also looking at places like the Hocking Hills farther south in the state. So we're hoping to build up a little stable of regular rides. And from time to time, maybe we'll swap one out and swap in a new one that we've designed in the meantime. So I don't know, Rod, do you have any?
Well, Joe and I have both done rides in Ohio a lot. We've both done GOBA. I've done GOBA many, many times. And so we're quite familiar with the areas of Ohio. And golly, it's just hard to choose. I mean, there are so many wonderful areas in Ohio to ride. Another possibility would be the Xenia area and Dayton with the Air Force Museum and the wonderful bike trails they have over there and the quaint restaurants. We've thought about Chillicothe and the association with the outdoor drama Tecumseh, Xenia, Blue Jacket. One of the things that we are going to do on this first tour, the Amish Country Tour, is on one of the days we have a loop that goes down through some historic sites such as Gnadenhütten or Gnadenhütten for those who prefer. Gnadenhütten and then over to Denison Train Museum with its connections with World War II and then up to Schönbrunn Village, the old center for Zeisberger's mission to the Moravian Indians. Then that evening, we're going to take everybody over to the outdoor drama Trumpet in the Land, which will tie all of that nicely together. So there are so many such wonderful venues in Ohio, though, that we could just go on and on. We could proliferate one tour after another. But we want to invest so much time in each of the tours and design it the way it needs to be designed that we don't want to have to keep reinventing the wheel because these take hundreds of hours to put together.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And who's the tech? Who's the one who does all the mechanical stuff
when the people
come broken down?
This is kind of interesting, and I'm so happy that Joe has joined me in this project because the way I look at it, and Joe may differ here, but I'm sort of the visionary. I tend to be more of a big picture guy and like routes and maps and ideas, and Joe is he's a very good detail guy. And he works with all of the communications and computer stuff, and so he has his own very valuable skill set, and I think that I just sort of proliferate ideas, generate ideas, and throw them out there, and then we have to sift through all that.
So as far as the bikes go, I'm the wrench.
Okay, that was the
That's
question.
That's what you were asking.
Yeah, okay.
Joe is the mechanic. He knows that stuff.
Well, I think that Buckeye Country Roads Bicycle Tour sounds like an interesting new company, and I'm glad to see it's a new company, you see.
It is.
And that means work, jobs. That's very cool. How can listeners find out about your company? Where do they go?
Well, the best thing to do is just to go to our website, I think, buckeyecountryroads.com, and they can find all the information there about the tour, the day-by-day, blow-by-blow description, the price, and all that sort of thing. There's an email form out there they can submit to reach us, or our phone numbers are there. So that's the best thing. Or possibly if they're in the greater Cleveland area or certain other areas where we've gotten literature out to the bike shops, they can drop by their local shop, and chances are they can find some of our literature there.
Well, Rod and Joe, thank you so much for trekking on up to Cleveland from the Columbus area. Buckeye Country Roads Bicycle Tours, brand new company in Ohio.
Yeah, we're marketing ourselves basically to serious cyclists who are not afraid to ride, but who are at the point in life where they also want to slow down and taste the chocolate and the pastries and taste the wine and the cheese.
Got it. Well, very good. Thanks so much for stopping up.
We appreciate it.
And during Radiothon, too. It's nice to have live bodies in the studio.
Yeah,
Thanks so much.
Diane.
Thank you,
Diane.
Really
All right.
It.
Good luck.
Thank
Thanks.
You.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Rod Hutton and Joe Florian are the proprietors of a new bicycle touring company here in the great state of Ohio called Buckeye Country Roads.
Yes, indeed. I always thought it would be a good idea, as I said, to have a touring company, and now we got one. We'll see how they do. Interesting guys. They had a little road trip up here from Columbus. They stopped at a bunch of bike shops on the way to drop off some brochures. So that's good. I hope they do well.
We wish them a lot of luck. There's certainly enough wonderful places in Ohio to ride.
I think so.
I hope they find enough wonderful people to come to Ohio and ride on their tours.
Seems like they have a good start.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah, and they're certainly experienced and passionate. So they've got that going for them as well.
Indeed they do.
I don't know if we're experienced, but we're certainly passionate about raising money for WJCU this week, and this is the second of two Radiothon editions of The Outspoken Cyclist, and it's time for you, if you haven't already done it yet, to call or go online and pledge to WJCU during Radiothon 2013.
We only come to you once a year. We don't need you to make a huge donation, although we'll take it if that's what you want to do. But we would just love for you to show your support for the Outspoken Cyclist and for WJCU. The facilities here have all been built with pledge radiothons in the past. And I know we have good need for this money again this year. We're going to do something wonderful with it. It's a wonderful place to produce the show. Everybody is awesome here, and we are all volunteers. And so if you like the Outspoken Cyclist, we would ask that you talk with your bucks and get online, and you can hit the little pledge button, wjcu.org, or call us at 216-397-4438, and we will answer the phones and take your pledge over the phone.
Very good. Before we get to the halfway point here, let's take a look at the news.
Okay, we can definitely do that. And the first news item is not very nice. Garmin Sharp's team got an early ride back home. When they awoke for the first of the two final stages of the Tour de Méditerranée to find all of their road race bikes gone. This is from cyclingnews.com on February 9th. Garmin Sharp truck was broken into at the Tour de Méditerranée overnight, and virtually all of the team's bikes were stolen. Riders of the U.S.-based team tweeted their shock, called for help, and wondered how they would take on the race's queen stage on Saturday. The loss forced the team out of the race for the final two stages. Thomas Dekker broke the news saying, "A good start is half the work. All bikes stolen here in France. And what now? Please wait." So from what I understand, they did not take the time trial bikes, only the road race bikes. And then everybody went back home.
Wow.
I know. Really, that's just so ugly. It's so mean to have your bike stolen. It's just one of the most horrible personal things. Ugh.
Well, in that case, it's not only their bicycles, they're tools. It's like if you went into a mechanic shop and stole his stack box full of wrenches, you know?
Exactly.
That's how they make their living.
That's exactly right. We're going to move on to something a little funnier. The best video of the week? It was a great spoof of Jimmy Fallon interviewing Lance Armstrong's bike. It was hilarious. So there was a silhouette of the bike. And what was really cool about the bike is it had toe clips and straps. It had a rear reflector, a Unicrown fork, but the dialogue was priceless. So if you go to YouTube and just type in Jimmy interviews Lance Armstrong's bike, you'll get to see it. And it was funny. Really, really funny. I really enjoyed that.
Lance is supposedly competing on Strava now.
What?
It's the only place he can race is for Strava segments. That's what I read this week.
I missed that one. Oh, thank goodness. I'm glad I missed that one. Oh, my goodness. All righty then. We have heard from Sarah Goodyear before. She is a writer who covers transportation a lot. This is from theatlanticcities.com. The link between kids who walk or bike to school and concentration is what she reported on. According to the results of a Danish study released last year, my Dutch friends are giving their daughter a less tangible but more lasting gift along with that bicycle that she got, the ability to concentrate better. The survey looked at nearly 20,000 Danish kids between the ages of 5 and 19. It found that kids who cycled or walked to school rather than traveling by car or public transportation performed measurably better on tasks demanding concentration, such as solving puzzles, and that the effects lasted for up to 4 hours after they got to school. The study was part of the Mass Experiment 2012, a Danish project that looked at the links between concentration, diet, and exercise. Niels Eglund of Aarhus University in Denmark, who conducted the research, told AFP that he was surprised that the effect of exercise was greater than that of diet. The results showed that having breakfast and lunch has an impact, but not very much compared to having exercised, Englund told AFP. As a third grade pupil, if you exercise and bike to school, your ability to concentrate increases to the equivalent of someone half a year further in their studies. Hmm. And it's a nice article. It's very nice. It comes out of theatlanticcities.com by Sarah Goodyear. And it's quite long, but another good reason to bike as a child. So the takeaway was, if more parents realize that packing the kids into the back seat actually affects their ability to learn, would they change their ways? Would they advocate for building schools in more walkable locations? Would they demand improved bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure, or simply make the time and effort required to get the kids to school under their own steam, accompanying them if they need be? It's a good question. I don't know.
Hey, we should take a break here.
Okay.
But I think you have more news.
I do.
We have more Radiothon pitching to do.
So we do.
You have that to look forward to. But join us on the other side of this break for more on The Outspoken Cyclist.
Want to know why you should pledge your support to WJCU during Radiothon 2013? Here's 35 good reasons.
Alter Ego.
Planeta Latino.
Beautiful Mess.
Assisted by Argyle.
Taking Up Space.
Revival.
Lithuanian Radio.
Caribbean Groove.
Armenian Radio.
The Outspoken Cyclist. Yeah.
Diversify. Fun.
Enter Stage Left.
Retro Radio.
The Mixing Board.
Biblia Radio.
WJCU Sport.
Jewish Community Radio.
Mad Cat Blue.
Visiting the Folks.
Vocal Vibration.
Music for Asylum.
Latin Lingo.
Metal on Metal.
Music for your laundry list.
I Haven't a Clue.
Soul Elixir.
Still Remix Nation.
Unknown Overload.
Asia Town Voice.
The Vindictive Alarm Clock.
The Heights.
Neo Rocks.
Wordplay. The Rock.
And there's a whole lot more where that came from. So call now or pledge online at WJCU.org. Many voices, many choices. WJCU Radiothon 2013.
WJCU University Heights from the campus of John Carroll University.
I'm Greg Priddy.
And I'm Diane Lees.
We're back on The Outspoken Cyclist, and as we've told you earlier this hour, it's Radiothon 2013. We're wrapping it up for another year, and so that means that there's only just hours left for you to get in and pledge for this year's support of WJCU.
Be one of the lucky ones. Get on board. All you have to do is call 216-397-4438 or get online and log in to WJCU.org and hit the Pledge Online button. We don't really care if you pledge a small amount or a large amount. Just knowing that your support for our show is there makes us happy. So we only do this once a year. We only come to you 1 week a year, and it's almost over. We've been doing really well so far. You know, we're in a contest here with these other shows, so it would be nice if you guys stepped up and helped us out. WJCU.org, pledge online, 216-397-4438. Give us a call.
Just to give you some idea of the scale of WJCU, our goal as a station for this radiothon is $45,000. Now, that is a tiny drop in the bucket compared to what it costs to run a major public radio station in the United States today. And that tells you that we get all of our labor for free and that we shop for the best deals on all the things that we actually have to pay for, like equipment and services and other things like that. $45,000 plus whatever we get from the university, which is not too much, basically runs this whole place for a year. And that's pretty amazing, I think.
I think $45,000 barely buys a day of public radio on the big stations.
I don't even know if it goes that far.
Yeah, exactly. As I said, it barely buys a day. I don't think it does.
It's a pretty good bargain.
It really is a bargain.
All right, 216-397-4438 or WJCU.org. You can do that with one ear and listen to Diane bring you the rest of the news with the other ear.
Okay. This comes from the Virginian Pilot. February 7th by Bill Sizemore, the Virginia House panel okays ban on dooring bicyclists. Dooring may not be a household word yet, but it's on its way to becoming a traffic infraction in Virginia. It's what occurs when someone opens a car door into a lane with moving traffic and a bicyclist slams into it. It's ugly. Senator Chap Peterson's legislation, SB 736, would forbid opening a door into moving traffic, quote, unless and until it's reasonably safe to do so, end quote. A violation would carry a $100 civil penalty. The bill, which has already cleared the state Senate, got a 4-2 thumbs up from a House subcommittee Wednesday and now goes to the full Transportation Committee. Dooring is a significant injury factor for bicyclists. Peterson, who's a Democrat in the Fairfax County, told the panel, I thought opening your door without looking in the mirror to see if even a car was coming was illegal. Why wouldn't it be illegal to, you know, to open the door into anybody? I don't know.
I'm going to do my best to channel John Schubert here and say, don't think that law is going to protect your ass from the from the 100 pounds of door.
That's correct.
That appears in front of you very suddenly.
Right.
Don't ride in the door zone,
right,
whether exactly. There's a law against it or not. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. All right. Next one. This is not specifically bicycling, but everybody knows I'm a yoga teacher. So doctor says studying yoga should be national priority. I'm telling you, a prominent psychiatrist called for the study of yoga to be a national priority last week, stating, quote, if there was a drug that could mimic the effects of yoga, it would probably be the world's best-selling drug, end quote. P. Murali Doraiswamy, M.D., professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences at Duke University, said that studies have shown yoga practice to produce a relaxation response that mimics the best anti-anxiety drugs on the market today, and that it can also help people with mild depression, insomnia, and ADHD. Studies have shown that yoga affects perhaps more than 200 different processes in our body and in our brain. It affects virtually every tissue and every system in our body. By and large, yoga seems to be very promising, he continued. We're not recommending that yoga is a first-line treatment for psychiatric illness by any means, but we feel it should be a national priority to do more studies on yoga. This was cute. So this is Jarrett Yount. He posted on our Facebook page, The Outspoken Cyclist, his third annual Go for a Ride by Myself Day event. So scheduled for April 1st, 2013. Last year, he had every state participate and is hoping for a slew of worldwide countries to join. It is billed as free wherever you are and at your own pace. It begins 3 a.m. April 1st, ends 3 a.m. April 2nd. It's sponsored by the Ride On Race series, and you can find it on Facebook at Third Annual Go for a Ride by Myself Day. The point is, riding with others is great, but a nice bike ride by yourself can produce some fabulous results. Greg rides alone occasionally, don't you?
Most of the time, yeah. In fact.
And finally, I was searching for a Valentine story when I came across a short piece from Australia. And since we received a pledge from Australia, I thought it would be fitting to include this post from the Coffs Coast Advocate, posted February 14th, Valentine's Day. Of course, almost a day ahead of us here in the U.S. It's a wheelie, no pun intended, but a pun intended, W-H-E-E-L-Y, lovely Valentine's Day for this local group. Valentine's Day is being celebrated by lovers of all ages, creeds, and interests, including those who love their bikes. As the sun rose over the slightly damp Sawtell headland this morning, one group was out for a romantic picnic. Coffs Bug, B-U-G, is a nonprofit community-based bicycle user group for the Coffs Harbor area that describes itself as ordinary people at various levels of fitness and experience who ride a variety of bicycles for transport, recreation, exercise, and just for fun. We ride together every Thursday morning and usually have breakfast at the surf club, Coffs Bug president Deb Meredith said. But today we decided to have a picnic to celebrate Valentine's Day. The group was well organized for the morning with wet weather gear, an array of snacks, and even some chocolate roses. If you share a love of bikes, check out coffsbug.org.au. I thought that was kind of nice. Of course, yeah. It's warm in Australia. It's summer there.
It is summer.
All right.
Okay.
All the news that's fit to talk about.
Okay, then. Let's move along to our second guest for the hour.
Yes, indeed. One of my favorite people, Willie Weir, who lives up in the Seattle area, has just returned with his wife, Kat. They were on a three-month tour in Southeast Asia, Myanmar, and Cambodia, and Laos. And he's just a wonderful storyteller. He comes from an acting background, a theater background, and he's just delightful to listen to. Hello, Willie. Welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. Welcome back to the States. And it's really good to be able to talk with you.
And it's my pleasure to be back.
Last time we spoke, you were just about ready to depart on your latest journey. Now you and Kat are already back and traveling around the country talking about your wonderful experience. Tell us first where you went and how long you were gone.
Well, first of all, I can't believe that 3 months can actually go that quickly. But yeah, it was a 3 month journey. We flew into Bangkok. We spent a month in Myanmar, Burma, and then we flew back to Bangkok because there's no land border to cross right now, at least as far as a foreigner. And then we went over to took a train over to eastern Thailand to a place called Ubon Ratchathani, and cycled from there up into the Bulawan Plateau up in Laos, and then cycled down and along the Mekong to Phnom Penh, and then out to the coast, and then cycled back towards Bangkok.
So it was a full 3 months you were gone.
Yes, yes.
Wow, wow. Well, I followed your blog as much as I was able and found not just your photos and dialogue fascinating, but your sounds of the day were so clever and so cool. Explain to the people who are listening what your sounds of the day were all about.
Well, I've had a relationship with public radio station KOW in Seattle since 1994, and I've done everything from write commentaries from the road from India and South Africa, and then sent cassette tapes from the Balkans, and then started, once digital, came around, started doing my own commentaries. But sounds, of course, when you're doing stuff for the radio, it doesn't matter how many photographs you've taken, they just don't transfer to the radio. So my ear has always been open to sounds, because, of course, with a radio listenership. And with a format of the show that's there, they have a little segment called the Sound of the Day for the radio station. And so I found myself with my microphone out, you know, throughout the day, and it was great to be able to have my ear attuned as well as my eyes to just listen to what is different and what piqued my interest and what was going to translate. And it came, you know, it came in the tune of everything from the clacking of silk weaving going on to the little clanking of a wooden water buffalo bell in Cambodia. They make them out of wood with a wooden clacker instead of the metal, to some pretty interesting, to a band playing a cover of White Wedding in Mandalay, Myanmar, which was not what I expected the band to play when I sat down to eat dinner that evening.
Well, I really liked the sound. One of my favorite sounds of the ones that you did were of the children waiting for the ferry to take them across a tributary to go to school. And they were with their bicycles. And I just thought that, you know, just this kind of chattering of these young kids, it was really, really nice.
Yeah. If there was a place in our journey that wish I could take everybody to and have them experience that moment, that might be it.
Really?
It was this little tiny, you know, Kat and I were coming down the Mekong, which is doesn't have a necessarily designated route. The main highway goes down a long, dusty, from what we talked to other cyclists, horrible route there. So we decided to stick and see if we could follow the Mekong down. And we were still in Laos, on my, close to the Cambodian border. And we came to a part in the path, and we literally were just on paths. Sometimes it just felt like we were in the back, everybody, people's backyards, and these huts along the Mekong. And we came to an end, and it just emptied off into the river. And we thought, wow, we're going to have to backtrack. But looked across the river, and there was this woman in a small wooden boat, and there was a cable that ran across, and she pulled it across. So basically, it was this little tiny ferry, and we got on it. There was one man with a scooter, another person we came across, and the moment we came across, Kat and I thought, I wonder how many people we could fit on that. And we had our answer within 5 minutes, because school had let out, and these kids came down the hill, and it ends up that 16 kids, bicycles, and two other folks, and the woman going across, and to watch that go across and then watch those kids take their bikes and pull them up and head up the hill. They look like little ants going up, and it was one of the most beautiful images we had in the entire trip.
Well,
we ended up meeting some high school teachers, or the primary and high school teachers, and they hosted us there that night. We ate dinner with them. It was just overall one of the more delightful days we had on the entire journey.
Well, it's a beautiful photograph. I really enjoyed it. And you know, for those who are listening via podcast, by the way, you might want to go to Yellow Tent Adventures and kind of you can see what I'm talking about. We'll talk about that a little bit later, too. You mentioned having dinner and all the native foods, and I know native foods can be both interesting and daunting. What was exciting about the food on this trip, and what was sort of daunting about the food on this trip?
Thailand is just always a delight to eat. I mean, it's just one of the most fabulous places to eat on the planet. So our time, you know, spent there was always focused around food. Myanmar, some heavy curry dishes, a lot of fried food along the way. We had to probably be the most careful about food there. The hygiene standards in a lot of places are not very high. Actually, both Kat and I got Giardia while we were in Myanmar.
Ooh.
Fortunately, there's some really amazing medication that you can take that isn't available in the United States that pretty much was able to take care of that pretty quickly. But in Laos, one of our favorite meals is a food called it's called lap or larb. That you find that in Thailand. It's a very, very spicy pork, and then it is often served with khao nhau or sticky rice. And so there's a very glutinous rice that very often you take a little ball of it, and then take that spicy pork which if you're not used to it can just like blow the top of your head off. Like, wow, is it spicy? But it is, and of course there's lime in it and all these different spices, and it is just incredible. I would have to say one of the things I probably enjoyed the most, and that probably has to do with just the heat that was involved during the day as far as temperature was concerned, was freshly squeezed cane juice. And they have along the Mekong and other places, depending on where cane is grown and it's nearby, they have to get there, and they just put that through the press. And then you have this light green cane juice. And all the ice in Cambodia is typically manufactured, often brought in around, so it's pretty safe to, you know, to drink. So we stopped for that as often as we could.
And so it was just like right by the side of the road, somebody would be making cane juice and you could just...
Oh, definitely. Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
I mean, sometimes you could have it. You could have it 20 times a day if you wanted.
Wow.
You know, it's one of those very, you know, easy kind of a home businesses that you could have. You know, you buy a little cart and this little press that you put the cane through, not once, but then twice, three or four times. And then everybody had their own little recipe for their juices. So some people added a little bit of kind of orange or a little bit of lime or some other flavor. So it was rarely just the cane juice, and sometimes some sort of like an herb or something, and sometimes we didn't even know what it was. But so it was fun because it was different from place to place.
So was there ever a time during this particular 3-month journey that you found yourself not able to eat when you wanted to eat? Was there ever a time when you couldn't find food?
Wow, let me think. You know, I don't think so. I mean, we had times, you know, probably water. I know that when we climbed the mountain pass heading over to Inle Lake, and this is in Myanmar, and so you end up climbing, and it's probably 4,000 feet, the mountain pass, and then you head down, and Inle Lake, which is about 47 square miles and one of the more fascinating places you will ever visit in your life. But heading up that road, it was really, really hot, and we thought we had enough water, but I don't think we did. And as you're just sweating buckets, and I remember Kat earlier in the day had said, you know, one of my fantasies is you know, someday when I'm riding a bike and really I have this fantasy of that somebody's going to drive by in a vehicle and stop and hand out like this ice cold soda to me or an ice cold beer. And, you know, because that's happened to me in the past. And so we're heading up and we're literally running out of water. And this truck, which we had seen make some deliveries to some other stores, had passed a couple of times. It came around the corner, passed us by, and he pulled over, and we thought he was going to make a delivery. He popped out, had two bottles of water, and gave one to Kat, gave one to me. Kat immediately just started crying. I mean, there's tears going. And this poor man's looking like, it's water. I'm sorry. And I'm thinking, no, you don't understand. You just fulfilled like 65% of a fantasy right there.
Right, exactly. Exactly. That's funny.
Food is so much easier to find when you are in countries where people get around by bicycle and by foot, because the distances between food very often are very short. So it's easier to run out of food in the United States or Canada or Australia than it is in so many other places around the world.
Isn't that interesting?
Because food needs to be nearby. In India, I got to the point in India where I stopped even carrying food until I got way up in the north end of the mountains, because food was never more than like 600 meters away. And you know, when I started out, I had, you know, the extra provisions and whatever, and it just seemed silly to cycle around with that. As long as you could actually ingest all the spicy food, which I love.
We're talking with Willie Weir. He and his wife Kat are back from their Southeast Asia trip, and obviously just had a great time, a wonderful time. Do you have a favorite country through which you toured this time? Does any one of these countries stand out as being, oh, I would love to go back there because it was my fave?
Yeah. You know, Myanmar was such a wonderful experience for us. I mean, and I think it's going to only get better for people who are traveling by bicycle. And I'd have to say that just as far as visually, traveling in Myanmar is like being on an endless parade route, and you are the parade. I have never been greeted so graciously with so much enthusiasm by every single living human being who was present than in Myanmar. Our faces got tired from smiling. Our voices got hoarse from, you know, calling out Mangalaba, which is the greeting. Of course, people were calling to us as well. And that was just every single day. And of course, when you're in the cities, that's a different situation, but anywhere outside, but, you know, even in Myanmar, sometimes even in the cities as you're cycling by. And so it was all about the people, but Myanmar is also one of the most colorful places I've ever been. It overwhelms you with the vividness of the colors from everything from what people wear to any of the festivals that are happening. We live in the Pacific Northwest. Colors are fairly muted here, and there they are alive with the most vibrant reds and oranges and purples and, you know, green. It can't be that green, but it is. And so that was just an amazing experience. Laos, for just the beauty of up in the mountains, we were up in the coffee-growing region there and some of the most beautiful waterfalls that we've ever seen. And just the life along the Mekong in Cambodia was one of the more – and for us, because every day was new, because we didn't know whether we were going to be on a path. We didn't know whether we were going to be hiring a boat to get us a little further down the river because the path ended, or whether we were going to be going through gravel or right through down through small little villages and then having the trail pop out and have a chance to look across this beautiful river. And I remember one evening – as you know, when the sun goes down on the Mekong, and the sun just seems like it's never been bigger anywhere on the planet than along the Mekong, and it is so serenely calm and still, that large river that's flowing along, but because it is so big, makes so little sound, and so you hear everything else. And we were down by the water, and as that sun was setting, and everything was in silhouette, and I heard a call that I recall from my childhood at the zoo. And I looked across the river, and there was the unmistakable silhouette of a hornbill. And, oh, I had just got goosebumps. And if I was a better swimmer, I would have tried to swim across to get closer to that magnificent bird. But it was worth it just to see it there.
Did you get
a
picture?
The answer is that every single one of those countries I would gladly go back to.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool. Did you get a picture of the bird?
Well, you know, it was far enough away that I was looking at it in binoculars. And so, I have a picture of the tree, but you really couldn't get that, you know, that silhouette. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, it's better that some of your images just stay in your brain.
Yeah, you just have the memory.
Every single one of them digitized.
How did your equipment hold up?
It's held up as it seems to have always held up, very, very well. We ride, Rodriguez, which are bikes that are built here in Seattle, our pannier, we carry Ortlieb, roll top panniers, which have just, I love their simplicity, and they've always worked very well. We carried, and this is somewhat of a joke between the two of us, because we carried in Myanmar, you have to stay at a registered guest house every night. That's required, and that really you are not allowed to camp. But I had the large roller top Ortlieb bag in the back of my bicycle that had a tent and camping gear, you know, just in case. We never did use it while we were there. But things were changing so much, and they are right now in Myanmar. We had no idea that maybe in the middle of our journey, the government might have announced that, hey, camping's open, because on a day-to-day, you'd hear new news within the country of what was open. Things were opening up, that all of a sudden the money issue had changed, and delightfully so.
How was the language? How did you navigate these languages?
I am the poster child of that. Yes, you can travel the world, even though you're just horrible with language. You learn how to greet and how to say thank you, and as far as that's concerned, for us, that's about as far as we get. You learn a couple of words here and there, and I wish that linguistically I had a better handle on languages. I wish it was a gift that I had, or that I'd grown up being bilingual or trilingual. I think it's much easier for that. But that's not going to keep me from traveling. There are plenty of times, especially in Myanmar, when I wish I'd had an interpreter. You're looking at some of the stuff, that, you know, a festival that's going on or a processional, and you want to know more, and there isn't the language to find out. So you just look in amazement and then maybe ask people down the road what you were seeing. And then at other points, you just realize that, wow, you've seen something you may never see again, and you may not have an exact explanation of what it was, but it was incredible.
Wow. So I know you're going to plan another one. What's your next one?
Oh, wow. You know.
Do you know?
We don't.
Okay.
We haven't made that decision. I would, there are so many places, and very often we're so involved in getting back at the journey and kind of sifting through what's already been there. We haven't even thought forward yet. It's this last month since we've been back has been looking back at the trip and sorting through 8,000 photos and everything that's gone on.
Are you going to turn it into anything other than the blog?
Well, because my background is in theater,
right.
I mean, I do a presentation about pretty much every journey that we do. And so I just did it in Seattle a couple of days ago, and then next week I'm in Indianapolis, and I'm in Missoula, Montana. I'm going up to Alaska. So I had a chance to do those presentations along the way, and I'll see what else we can either put up on the blog you have all this information that's fun to do, and these experiences, it's fun to see what you can do with them.
Well, I am so glad that you would take some time to sit back down and talk to me again. Will I see you at Interbike again this year, maybe?
That is quite possible.
We'll
see. It depends on my own travel schedule.
Yeah, me too. All right. Well, Willie, thank you. And Kat, I'm glad you're back home and safe and that you had such a fabulous trip. It's yellowtentadventures.com. It's just a joy to read all that you and Kat do on these trips. And thanks for talking with me this evening.
My pleasure. And I'll have a feature coming out in Adventure Cyclist magazine as well.
Oh, very good.
In a couple of months.
Okay.
Yep.
Have a great night.
Thank you, Diane.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Willie Weir is I guess you'd call him a freelance adventurer.
That's a good description. I like that.
A taker of trips and a
reporter on same.
Yeah.
He's great.
A capturer of events and sounds and other such things. Yellow Tent Adventures.
He's a poet.
Oh, okay.
I think. I mean, that's the way I see it. Sort of this sort of poetic cyclist. Just an awesome guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we thank all of our guests this evening, and we thank you if you've contributed to Radiothon 2013 for WJCU. And if you haven't, now's the time, because this is the last time we're going to say anything about it except for some thank yous in the coming weeks. But this is the last time we get to put the bite on you, so to speak, and ask you for your financial support for WJCU for another year.
And we appreciate you either calling us at 216-397-4438 or getting online at wjcu.org and clicking that little Pledge Online button. We only have a few more hours of pledging, and we would appreciate your support for The Outspoken Cyclist for 2013. We won't come back to you until 2014.
If you're a podcast listener and you're listening to this on kind of a delayed basis, because we know that not everybody listens right on the day that we broadcast, go out to wjcu.org. We're going to try and keep that pledge site up for a few days at least after the end of official Radiothon so that you'll still have an opportunity to contribute, even if you're not hearing this for a few days after its air date, which was on Saturday, February 16th. Well, I think we've about covered it.
I think we have.
All right. Well, enjoy your coming week. I hope the weather is breaking where you are and you can get out for a ride, even if it's a short one. And be sure and come back and see us next week for another edition of The Outspoken Cyclist.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at wjcu.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at wjcu.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.